You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Unless you want to start on something else, are you good to go?
I'm good to go.
Okay. In yesterday's session, we, our product Messenger Pro, had indicated that a failure between yesterday and today at $1,009 would decline to $996, which is a 13-point move. And yesterday's session did close above $1,009, but did get back below that level in today's early session, and the market did decline very sharply and did complete the forecast for the 1,000 or for the 13-point decline. Now, we're trading below 996 now, which is the weaker position, and under normal conditions, which I think we're starting to see a little bit more of actually now, this market needs to come down between today and Monday and finish off and test the $990 level. It's not that, you know, we're only a few points away from that, but under normal conditions, we would see lower prices here into Monday. Now, having said that, and by the way, the forecast for the decline for from 1,009 down to 996 is what's called a super trade, and these are point-to-point forecasts that the system makes, and it was due to be touched in today's session. We had talked early yesterday, or not early yesterday, but during yesterday when you and I were speaking, we had talked about how the market needed yesterday to get up to complete, under normal conditions, it would need to complete the 1013 to 1015 level. It's listed in our support and resistance panel. And that level, you know, I was giving you an explanation for what that level was, you know, a reason why they had to go up there. I gave you a description of, as best as I could with the ballpoint pen, of the how and why of the market movement and why it needed to get up to 13. Well, they completed that late yesterday, and in doing so, set the market up for today's failure. Yeah, you know, we weren't 100% sure that they would fail at 09, but by getting back below 09 in today's session, that would force the market down after having completed the 13 target. This may sound confusing to you, but in our world, the completion of 13 yesterday was very important and set the stage for today's continued forecast for the decline. So I want to mention one other thing a little bit longer term, and we're of course coming into the weekend, and in the weekend report we update our longer term section of the nightly report. But what I wanted to point out was that unless we're mistaken, there needs to be yet even a further decline from where we are right now. And so this decline should extend itself, even though we're talking about, you know, we've completed 996, you know, we're talking about it touching 990. In spite of that, into next week, there should be continued bearish pressure for lower prices. and that means lows below the recent set of swing lows down at 989. That means that we should be breaking out below that with this run. Even if we have a bounce of a day or so, whatever, we should still continue lower into next week.
And just to remind our listeners, what you just said has absolutely nothing to do with the negative numbers today from the Michigan Senate report. Or continued foreclosures or more jobless claims. It has to do purely with your brand.
Yes.
Of analysis.
Yeah, that's correct. And quite honestly, a lot of the information that's come out during this advance, all the way from the July 7th bottom, has been very bearish. And yet the market has advanced through it. So no, we, you know, to be honest with you, I think there's more mystery in trying to decide what a piece of fundamental news is going to do to the market than there is in true technical analysis of the market. If you have to say that technical analysis is mysterious, which I don't think it is, but if you want to call it a mystery, if you want to call it hocus pocus, I think there's a lot of hocus pocus just in trying to figure out what a piece of news is going to do to the market. People say, well, gosh, you know, if this happens, it's going to be bullish, or, you know, if the president says this, it's going to be bearish on the market. Quite often, it's quite the opposite of that.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, no, go ahead. Well, you were about to say something.
Often you talk about price, and often you speak of a number.
Mm-hmm.
You'll say that a price has significance or that a number has significance.
Mm-hmm.
Are you speaking of the same thing, or are you speaking of two different things?
If you're talking about when we've had the discussions about the technical analysis of a number, of numbers, is that what you're referring to? As opposed to price, or maybe I'm not understanding the question.
We all know, price is composed of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But numbers and price are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
The number 9 is simply the number 9. But if I'm trying to sell a widget for $9 that normally sells for, or that last week was selling for $20,
mm-hmm.
then that 9 may be perceived as a bargain. So, when you talk about that technical analysis of numbers, are you talking about the pure number and not the price, right?
That's correct. We're talking about the nature, the construction of the number, as opposed to its relativeness to other prices. In technical analysis, we're looking
at... Other prices or other numbers?
Well, in the market, when people talk about price, they're often saying, well, we're testing an old high. Because they're saying that this number, let's just say it was 1,015, was some high previously, and they're referring to and making it relative to a previous number, and that's the reason the price is important. That's a different reason than the number 1,015 itself inherently, by its construction, being an important number, irrespective of what price has done in the past on a chart. The number itself has a certain construction to it that makes it important once something achieves that number, a stock or a commodity. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Am I making the distinction? Because it sounds to me like you're asking me a question about the difference between price as displayed on a chart and the analysis of a number.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm asking. Is a price and a number the same thing, or is price and a number two entirely different things?
Price and numbers are the same thing, but the analysis of them can be different.
Okay.
And so the number 1,015 can be a price, but it also can be analyzed independent of previous price movement on a chart as a number. And part of our work is to analyze and study the nature of numbers themselves. Nature, it's, and we've talked about this, nature itself utilizes numbers. The universe, if you want to put it so broadly, is well aware of numbers. If we were to, as an example, if an alien from another universe were to come to us and we wanted to communicate with him and we did not have any language, obviously he doesn't know English, let's just say, and we certainly don't know his language, you could say that we could communicate with math, though. Because 1 and 1 is 2 over here, and it's certainly going to be 2 wherever he comes from. And
it's just not going to be called 2.
It's not going to be called to. So because of that, I mean, that's just a broad example. Mathematics is a universal expression. It's not a local expression to a specific, you know, place in the universe. It's universal. And so we could communicate with people from other galaxies because of the universality of math. They would understand what 1 is, what 2 is, what 3 is in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
But we could certainly communicate. So in that sense that I'm saying that numbers themselves are important because prices are important as you look at the chart, but the numbers themselves are important because they're universal, because they're not something that they're... Our version of numbers is man-made. Maybe they don't count from 1 to 10 the way we do, but they do count from 1 to 10 in another way. And so the universality of numbers makes the study of numbers an imperative, because it's something that is universal. It's so big that it crosses, you know, time and space, all time and space. Numbers are numbers wherever you are in the universe. And so a person could make the argument, you know, we've heard this before. People say, well, that sounds an awful lot like numerology. That sounds an awful lot like, you know, mysticism or something like that. And we're not taking that approach at all. You know, we've heard this also from people that are religious, saying, well, you know, the Bible, you know, clearly states, you know, this, that, and the other about numbers or whatever. But the fact is there's a whole book in the Bible called Numbers. And the fact is that the Bible is filled with very important numbers as well, that they make note of in the Bible. Christ rose after 3 days. He was in the desert for 40 days, tempted by the devil, and on and on and on. So this is, you know, numbers are everywhere. We're not trying to make a mystical thing out of them. It's just that anytime something has a universality to it, it's worth studying. And so quite often the practical use of this, and I've described this before and I'll say it again, when the market reaches levels that you are not able to determine through an ordinary method, like a charting method, of where prices should go at a certain point, because you don't have any price, previous price levels to look at as an example, because the chart doesn't go back that far, et cetera, et cetera, we will often use a combination of tools to develop where prices would go, and quite often that leans heavily on the technical nature of upcoming numbers, meaning numbers that are either above the market or below the market. And that's how we got, as an example, the 1013/1015 level that the market did indeed hit yesterday. Previously, when the market swung up on the 7th, it hit 1016. And so there's a reason it went to those levels, and those levels were listed in our support and resistance panel. And they're there because the nature of the numbers at that level, the technical setup of the numbers was important enough that we could say 1015 is an important level independently of what the chart says. And one of your other guests, I'm sorry, I'm at a loss for names right now. Mike uses a method where, as the market's coming down, you know, several months previously, he's making notes of prices and remembering those price levels. But there still is a possible error with that, and that is that those futures contracts no longer exist, and the market has now moved to a new futures contract many months hence, later, and therefore he has to make an adjustment for those numbers, or maybe he doesn't. I don't know. But
no, I don't think he does, because 1015 is 1015, whether it's the December contract or the June contract or the 2004 contract.
That's correct.
1015 still 1015, right?
That is correct. And I'm only stating, I don't know if he has to make a correction for that or not.
I don't think he does. You know,
but
when he's on next Tuesday, I'll ask him. If he's listening, he'll probably pipe in on my messenger and.
Yeah, and I'm certainly not being critical. I'm just simply stating I don't know if he's making a correction for that or not. That old futures contract has expired. The new futures contract may treat that number differently. I don't know, because I don't use that idea, even though I think it's a very good idea. I like the fact, and I've mentioned on the show before that I like that idea. But if you don't have those numbers, then when the market gets to a level that there isn't any chart support or resistance, our methodology, the practical use of this, is that we will go ahead and use levels that are important numerically, inherent in the number itself. The
right.
Construction
it has nothing
of the
to,
number.
It has nothing. What you do has nothing to do with the what contract we're trading now, what
no.
month we're in. And so, if 1015 is an important number to you today numerically,
yes,
it will also be important to you numerically 5 years from now, right?
That's correct.
Even if the market has ran to a gazillion and come back again.
That's
or
correct.
Not come back again.
That is correct.
Okay.
And we will tie together as much as we can any other work that we can to put that number together. Like I said before, the only stuff we put out is our best work. We're trying to come up with the very best solution. And the market is something that requires a solution. So that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to solve the market's position, because the market gets into all kinds of different positions, and it needs to be, for lack of a better word, solved. Solved meaning you have to understand, you know, you're trying to solve a portion of it. Where would prices go? Where would they find a great deal of resistance? Where could we trade off of? Can we make a forecast? And when a lot of things come together, then you can make a forecast, like if the market fails at 1009, it'll drop 13 points down to 996, which is what we did yesterday for today's session. That kind of call, when enough things come together, then you can really put a great forecast together and really have a great idea of what's going to happen under a given set of conditions. And that's why it's important to be patient, to wait for those conditions to show up in the market, so that you can take good advantage of them at that time and not worry so much about trying to get something every little day or every minute and all that stuff out of the market. Take your time with this. Be a little bit more of a scientist. Be a little bit more of a, you know, think of how the FBI works in stalking somebody, and they take an awful lot of time in waiting, listening to telephone conversations or watching a person move. Yes, they surely they want to arrest that guy. They really want to put it to him, but they know that they really have to wait for the right set of circumstances to happen. Think of yourself in a little bit in those terms, waiting for the right stuff to happen, and then acting quickly, acting effectively, managing risk when it does occur. I just cannot say enough about the value in understanding the principle that for most of us, people who are not super, super skilled in the market, there's generally 1 to 3 really good opportunities, excellent opportunities in a given day to trade. And so,
Okay, can I ask you a question here?
Sure.
All right. Let's say you like cantaloupe, right?
Okay.
You go into the grocery store and you see a cantaloupe, and maybe whatever the price of that cantaloupe is, it seems a little bit overpriced. Could you analyze that number and say, you know what? I think I'm going to come back in a few days, and the price of that cantaloupe will be less?
That's an interesting idea. I've not done that, but I will tell you that if I had charted the price of cantaloupe and it was breaking out to new highs and I had no previous information, I would then potentially use the numbers themselves, the constructions of the numbers themselves, to put together an important level for the cantaloupe to come to, the cantaloupe to run to.
Can you imagine walking up to the manager of the grocery store or going to the cashier,
right,
and you have
right.
nothing in your hands and, sir, don't you want to check out? Yes, I'd like to short some cantaloupes, please.
That's funny.
I need a laugh track here. So.
No, I'll get you. I'm helping you here. That's good. Now, listen, there's another issue here, though, and I want to make a point of this, and I've mentioned this before, that in any given market, there's something that we call the base number. The base number is a number that is the lowest denominator, the lowest common denominator for computing levels in that market. And so in your question being put about the cantaloupe, and you remember, I've mentioned this before, I mentioned the idea about the base number. The S&P has a different base number than the T-bond market does,
right,
in
have,
our work.
We have talked about that.
Right. So one of the things that is a part of this is that, yes, the number is important, as you said before. 1,015 is important, but it's important for the S&P. It's not necessarily the same importance as it would be in a market that contains a different base number. So the T-bond market, whatever the version of 1,015, because the T-bond it runs in 30 seconds. So, but let's just say it had the same kind of number. That number might not be the same importance to that, because the base number for that market, the position that we start all of our building from, in terms of technical analysis, is a different number, perhaps, in T-bonds than it is in the S&P. But with regard to simply the S&P itself, 1,015 will always be important. But again, it may not be important in a market that has a different base or beginning number. So that's one of the things. So when you ask the question about the cantaloupe, I don't know what the base number for computing cantaloupe pricing is, but it could be determined. It can be determined. And I have to tell you that it can only be determined, as far as I know, by experimentation. I don't have a forecasting or a tool to definitively determine what the base number is. I have to figure it out and experiment with it until I can see that the market is reacting off that number. I wish it was easier. I wish it was cleaner and more elegant than that. But in order to determine a market's base number, you have to experiment with the market until you can prove to yourself that that number is the one that's operating in the market. And it's fairly easy at some point to realize, yes, that's what it's doing, because your forecasts are working out correctly. The S&P's base number allows us to make forecasts like the ones that we talked about, the 1009 down to 996, and because we can repeat that over and over again and do over the number of years, we're quite certain we have the number correct. But it does come through experimentation. I don't have a way of just simply looking at a market and saying, well, that market's base number is this. I don't have an app for that. I wish there was an Apple iPhone app that would allow us to do that, then we could really run somewhere with this product. But listen, we've talked about a lot of this before, And I don't want to discount the value of indicators. And I do want to say to people that there are indicators, and we said this yesterday, and I think it bears repeating, that when somebody tells you that an indicator is a lagging indicator and therefore has no value, he's an idiot. And the reason he's an idiot is because that doesn't make any sense. The fact that something lags is what everything does. Everything lags. I mean, it's like saying, you know, when the light changes green, your car has no value because you're lagging the light. You know, now you go through the green light, you know, because it lags. Everything lags. Anything you are measuring is a lag.
There's a lag
between the event and the actual thing. Point me out to something that doesn't lag. The whole world lags. Everything lags. Any event that occurs, any measurement of that is a lagging indicator. Because it happens after the event. No matter how fast after, it still is a lagging indicator. And logically, the fact that something lags doesn't mean that inherent in its movement, the indicator's movement, this was the main point I want to make, that there isn't something predictive in the movement of it. And there quite often can be. So before you make your point, and I want you to remember what you're about to say, I just want to finish this idea that all indicators of any kind are lagging because they're using information that happens in real time and then reporting on it. So by the very nature, all indicators of any kind are lagging indicators. So when somebody says your indicator is a lagging indicator, what an idiotic statement to make. All indications of any kind are lagging. And once you have the information that you got through reading the real-time event and turning it into this lagging indicator, the indicator itself can and sometimes does have predictive value. But the idea that because it lags means it has no predictive value, that's just somebody speaking without thinking, or he doesn't know how to think because the statement makes no sense at all. So don't let anybody discourage you if you're listening and you're worried about using indicators. Indicators can be predictive in value even if they are lagging, like all other indicators in the universe lag off the original event. The original event occurs, price moves, and then you're measuring it somehow. That's a lag, and all indications are lagging. Go ahead and make your point.
Well, I had one point I was going to make, but as you were talking, another point came to mind. The point I was originally going to make is that one of our listeners wrote in the other day and said, baseball statistics are lagging indicators.
Dramatically lagging.
But
the game's the hell over.
But they are the greatest predictor we have of future performance of any given individual and or team.
Okay, I'm taking him to lunch because that is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Look at what sports books do with the stats, the over, the under, all that stuff, people placing bets. How does the sports book know to, you know, turn it up on one side and turn it down on the other side, right? Because they're using indicators from the previous games. If a person in a boxing match, he's won 7 in a row and this guy's a new guy, you know, they're trying to balance their bets and they're doing a lot of that work based on previous action. So they're using a lagging indicator, very much like he said. You tell him I said he gets a free lunch from Page Trader.
I'm sure he's listening now.
For that.
The other thought that came to mind is because that's an indicator that, as you said, that's a huge lag. The game's over.
Mm-hmm.
But time is relative. So I'm watching my VU meter on my screen. And I don't know, do you know what a VU meter is?
Yes, I do. It's the little meter that moves when your voice talks. It's measuring the amplitude of your voice. And it's putting it into a chart format, which is that needle that swings from 0 all the way to 100 and into the red.
Except because mine is digital and not analog, I have 2 little green bars that bounce up and down.
Okay.
As opposed to a needle that swings back and forth.
Uh-huh.
And as you speak, it is, in effect, measuring your voice.
Mm-hmm.
If it goes up into the red, I know that I need to turn something down a little bit. And if it's, you know, but... Now we've gone from a game that's already over to a statistic, but we're talking about something here that is milliseconds.
Mm-hmm.
But this indicator that I have, this VU meter, it is a lagging indicator.
Mm-hmm.
Now, listening to you through my ears and my eyes on the screen, you would go, well, that's a real-time indicator.
Mm-hmm.
Not really.
No, no, it's not.
You've got to speak it, and, you know, faster than I can think it, it measures it on. It measures what you just said on the screen. But,
right.
Nonetheless, it's a lagging indicator.
Well, listen, I want to send everybody who's listening out there with this question when somebody says indicators are no good because they're lagging. And I want you to just look them straight in the eye and say, what indicator can you show me that doesn't lag the original event? And the person will stare back at you for a second, and then he'll come up with some kind of long pause. And in that pause, you can say to yourself, you're an idiot. That's what you can say.
In the world of trading, what they're going to throw back at you is Elliott Wave, Fibonacci.
No, that's not it. No, 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 no. I'm going to tell you something. That we're talking about indicators right now. Now, that's a chart price pattern, and you know, I can address that as well. But we're talking about the idea of
You're right. It's not an actual indicator that you can load onto your chart.
Right. I'm talking about the world of indicators. I'm talking about something that is designed to plot, chart out, in some way react to an original event, and all indicators are lagging. So that's why I'm saying it's just an idiotic argument, and I've heard it for years, and the people that I've mentioned that back to, you know, they walk away scratching their heads because they realize at some point that everything is a lagging indicator of every type. Now, chart patterns and things like this is a very different subject, and it's a different subject because it is a completely subjective subject. Because in Elliott Wave, as an example, which is a pattern recognition system, you'll find that any one person or any group of people will have a different reading for what Elliott Wave we're in right now. So some people will say, "Well, this is a complex correcting four," and to another person, they'll say, "No, this is actually just the C wave of a four, and we're heading up into a five," or "This is actually just a large wave one, and we're in, you know," any number of convoluted explanations for the same piece of information,
right,
in front of them. And so it's a very subjective type of thing. And the reason the indicators are better is because the indicator is going to plot and print the same thing every time under a given set of conditions. My point in bringing all this up, though, Duane, was to give people the idea. We're talking about more advanced subjects with numbers and things like this, but there are some indicators that are very good and can be used as predictive or at least very helpful in having a good idea of what the market's going to do under a given set of conditions. And if I ever do come out with a course or something to help people put the markets to better use, I would definitely include an indicator in that course for people to understand and watch its movement, because that indicator, even though it's lagging, and I'm saying that, you know, with a smile on my face, mm-hmm, is predictive. It can be used under a set of conditions as predictive. And so don't throw your indicators away. Just understand that it's not going to be, it's like everything else. There's going to be a certain set of conditions. There's going to be a certain bend in the river, a certain point of the river that you can understand. Wait for that point and then trade that point. You'll be much better off than trying to turn everything into a trade. So I went the long way around to get to that point, but I think some of the points we're talking about are important points for people to remember, you know.
Tom, who gave us the baseball analogy,
yes,
on the lagging indicator, he just sent me an email, and it says, all market indicators must lag especially because, the market is a game of follow the follower, not
right,
follow the leader. Think
herds
and waves, because the dimension of participation must occur.
Well, now that's deep. I'm going to have to sit for a minute and think about that, but he's a thinker, and
Tom is definitely a thinker. Yes.
Okay. Well, he's got my the tip of the hat.
Well, sounds like something you'd say, because the dimension of participation must occur.
Right, and the dimension of participation is
maybe
for
it's
us.
Something you have seen.
Is
maybe
the volume?
He's
yeah,
that back to you.
Yeah, it's the dimension of volume. Volume, yeah, being the third dimension, the dimension of participation in the market.
Follower, not follow the leader.
Mm-hmm.
Think herds and waves.
That reminds me of curds and something in a poem, curds and waves.
Mike Reed did type in, We were talking about, and you were asking if he uses the same price or because the futures contract expires.
Yes.
What Mike typed in, if it is from months ago, I use the S&P cash and adjust the futures contract to the current fair value.
Okay, now that's beautiful because I, intuitively, not having done that before, and thank you, Mike, for saying that, is my question was before was, you know, if he's using previous data, is there some adjustment necessary? And he has explained beautifully this adjustment that he's making, referencing it to cash and then the current futures market. So he's making that kind of adjustment to get to his version of the number, which, as I mentioned before, if you have the strong interest in the market, obviously, that he does to record prices that are coming down, knowing that the future is going to come and those prices are not going to be there anymore, and that that you may indeed find yourself in a position where the market is not able to provide you a level. It's above, you know, the chart isn't there. Virtually the chart isn't even there because you're in a new contract. That's a beautiful way, and obviously he has put that together to find, you know, his levels that are in spots on the chart that you would not normally be able to find. And so that's a great example of solving a problem. He went into this and solved the problem on his own with kind of an original, at least as far as I'm concerned, original way of taking care of that issue. We do it a little differently, but it doesn't make a difference. The important thing is that he found it worked for him, and he's able to, you know, where that applies, he's able to apply it. So thank you for letting us know that. I thought there might have been some adjustment necessary, and like what you were saying, the price is the price, but there really does, I think, need to be an adjustment, as he's talking about there, referencing it to cash, etc. So, as you know, the cash and futures market don't trade together. The cash can get ahead of futures, right, higher than futures, and cash can get below futures. So that adjustment period, by the way, shrinks usually as the contract comes closer and closer to expiration.
Another email here regarding your comment on the base number for any given market. Are you saying that there's only one base number for the S&P? Are there multiple? Let me just read you the email. To get this in time, please ask David if these are base numbers for the S&P. 11, 17, 27, 35, 54.
No, those sound actually very, they sound like Fibonacci numbers, but I'm not 100% sure if
they are. No.
Okay. The base number is a single number in any given market, and the number is a beginning point for future calculations in that market. The number doesn't have to be an even number, even meaning, or it can also be a fractional number is what I meant to say. It doesn't have to be even either. It doesn't have to be a 2, a 4, or an 8, but it can be an odd number or an even number, but it can also be fractional in nature. The S&P is an easy market because the base number is not fractional. And even if it were fractional, once you have the number, you can work with it. But anytime you have fractions, it's a little bit more complicated to work things out. And it depends on how big of a fraction you're dealing with. If it's really close to the whole number, then it doesn't make a whole lot of difference. But if it's a distance from it, then you have to really account for it. So to answer his question, it's a single number. And that number, it would be true. Now, having said this, I want to say I have not worked out the base number for all 36 or 38 commodities. I've only worked it out for a few markets. But the S&P's base number is going to be a single-digit number. It's not going to be a two-digit number. And furthermore, virtually, I believe this, even though I haven't done the work on all markets, I believe all markets would have a single-digit base number, and I think he began at 11.
Well, you know, I know what you've done is proprietary, but I have heard it said that, you know, like the S&P, in reference to the S&P, that everything moves in multiples of 3. I've heard it said that everything moves in multiples of 5, and I'm just waiting for those two guys to have a street fight because I really want to watch and see who wins.
Well, it's probably on YouTube already. We can probably Anyway, so the number, to answer his question, the number is...
Well, that's cool. You've at least narrowed it down.
It's a single-digit number.
Yeah, okay.
It's a single-digit number.
All right, guys, get to work. Get the slide
Well, listen, I don't want to play a teasing game, and I don't want to make it sound like we're...
Well, no, but you have a right to what's proprietary to you and your business model.
No, of course, and I appreciate you saying that, but the fact is, and so we can make it clear again, it's a single-digit number, and it certainly is a single number itself. It's not a number, there's not multiple numbers for base numbers. The base number is a beginning number, is a point from which we can reference all market movement, even if the market goes quite a distance away from that number. Like, as an example, just as an example, if the number were 5, that number would be the beginning point for calculations all the way up from no matter how high the market went. So here we are, you know, at 1,000 or 996 right now. That 5 would still be the base number for calculations up at these levels. I don't have to keep a big string of calculations going from 5 all the way up. I just have to know 5 so that I can know where to start at current market conditions to continue to calculate. So once you have the base number, you can apply your calculations to the market at any level that it's trading at. But I have found that the forecasting is not going for us, for the way that we do things. Our forecasting is not going to work out correctly if we change that number. And so that number actually is a very important piece of our work, is to discover the base number. I wish I had a way, and I wish I had the time to go through each and every market to determine and calculate its base number, so that we could work that out. And someday I will finally get through all that. But I will tell you this, that the base number for the S&P 500 is a different number. Some numbers are going to be the same in different markets, but the number between the S&P and soybeans, which are completely different numbers, are different. The number for the S&P, the base number for S&P, and the base number for soybeans is a different number. So just keep in mind that they can be different. Some markets will have the same number. Like, as an example, the Russell index is the same base number as the S&P.
And yet they behave so differently.
They do behave differently, but
at
their
calculations...
At the end of the
day, they track the same pretty much on a chart, but their behavior is different.
That's correct. So that's a, you know, I hope that's of some help to people. I think it's good for people to think about other ideas. I have learned a lot by thinking outside as best as I can, thinking outside the box. And the box basically is what is offered to you out there. Later, when you get kind of more advanced in thinking outside of the box, you start trying to think outside of your own box. You know, first you look outside and people say, this is how things work. And you try to think outside of that box. And after a while, you develop ideas. But then at some point, you try to think outside your own box that you've developed, and that helps you grow in making discoveries. And it's work. It's work, because you go down a lot of empty roads and you find things. But it all adds up to experience and, in a sense, a certain kind of wisdom that of how little we really know, and that the little that you do get, you want to take the best advantage of. You're not going to find a gold nugget every day. But the little bit that you do understand, the Mike Reed taking his numbers from the past and really keeping that in mind and putting that to the highest and best use in its current market, you know, we want to take the very best use, the highest and best use of the things that we do understand. And listen, if you only understand one or two things, that's fine. Take advantage of those things. Put it to its highest and best use. That's kind of like what real estate people do. They take a piece of land and they develop it to its highest and best use. You know, one guy might say, well, I'll just buy the land and I'll just sell it. And that's one use. Another guy will say, well, I'll subdivide the land and I'll put, you know, a little strip mall on it. That's another use. Another guy will say, well, I'm going to develop the land for a special kind of industrial use. And so what we want to do is, when we find these little nuggets, things that are very useful to us, whether it's with an indicator, whether it's with numbers, et cetera, don't just put that aside. When you find a nugget, really go into that. Take some time and really develop that idea. Work that idea out. Don't just say, well, that's pretty neat. It is maybe pretty neat, but maybe there's two or three other really neat things about that idea. And I want to say, with regard to that, a lot of my best discoveries were the single idea that seemed kind of neat that I put aside and later studied and thought, gosh, there's three things in there that I would have never noticed before. And those three things allowed me to now know this little part of the river, so to speak, you know, in the market. So these have been very, very good ideas for me the idea of working with some little nugget. Don't just put it aside. Put some time and energy in that. See if you can't develop it to its fullest and best use. That has been a really tremendous thing in my work with markets, is that very principle, is that I put it to its highest and best use. It's hard enough to find one, right? I mean, we all know it's hard enough to find one. And when you do find one, don't take it lightly. Study it. Turn it around. Look at it from all angles. Play it this way. Play it that way. And see if that, you know, you'll actually be putting your own work to its best use and really getting a good value out of that. And I have a number of things that I have found over the years that I've gone back to later and said, God, how did I not see that? And, you know, that's good. And then you want to put that into your system and start to use it. Always, again, with risk control and with the idea that there's 1 to 3 really good opportunities, unless you're just super, super good in the market. There's usually 1 to 3 really good opportunities each day in the market. Have patience, wait for those opportunities, put your best stuff to work there, be willing to miss a trade without having that change your behavior, be willing to miss a trade without having that get you angry, be willing to make money without being angry that you didn't make all the money. Learn to treat the market maturely. You know, care for your approach to the market so that you're not damaging yourself every day psychologically by getting upset, by getting angry. In a month's period of time, you're going to have a lot of opportunities to make some money. And that's all you need to know. Don't tie it all down to one day. And if you're in an argument with your girlfriend or your wife or have outside problems, I would tend to not want to trade too much because that can be destabilizing. It can throw your game off. And this is a game. This is definitely a game. You have to have a skill set. You have to have your head together. You hear basketball players, Michael Jordan sometimes says, my game is off. And that can happen to anybody. So if your game is off, you're going through rough times, it might be best just to watch the market for a little bit. Try to think maturely about this subject. Try to think maturely about it and see if you can make a few thousand dollars or whatever it is to you that's important at the end of a month. And if you can do that, then you can look in the mirror and say, you know, if I can do that, what can't I do? And slowly build yourself up over time. It is a progressive achievement. This isn't something that you leap to great heights. You progressively achieve in this, and you work yourself up to higher and higher use of your skills, your self-development, your psychology. And ultimately, you can come to the point where the markets become a pleasure and a profitable center for you to make some money out of for the rest of your life. And that's the goal. You don't have to be a millionaire. And like I said before, stop reading trading books and trading magazines that tell you how it is. It's time for you to tell yourself how it is and to find your best skills, put those skills to work in the market, refine them as best as you can, and don't listen to what other people say they did, what their trades are, how much they made, how much they lost, all that stuff. What matters is how you interact with the market, and especially important is how your psychology is. You want to keep your psychology clean so that you can come to the market every day and have a decent trading day. When the opportunity comes, you're ready to act. So I hope that's of some help. And I know people know everything that I'm saying already. I'm sort of reiterating it, and it even helps me to hear myself say these things because I myself, obviously, am like everyone else and have to go through the ups and downs of life. And on a good day, boy, I am sharp, and I'd love to show the world what I can do. But if I'm on a bad day, I've learned a bad day, meaning that my head's not together or I just can't see the moves in the market, I tend to just not trade it. I just let it go. I have 30 days to show my statement and to jump up and down at the end of the month, you know. I don't have to get it all done in one day.
That's true.
So,
hey, who's trading these beans overnight? I know that the American market, it opens after the S&P. It closes before the S&P.
A lot of the overnight movement is brokerages. Brokerages actually giving the bid and the ask, you know, trying to make the spread, which the spread is quite a bit wider at night.
Because, I mean, on the overnight, this thing ran, beans ran up to 1031.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting at my desk doing some work, and I looked up, and I saw 1026, and I did I looked at a few things, and I go, you know, I think I'd like to sell the beans at 1026. Well, they ran up to 1031, so if I'd have been in that trade, I would have probably been stopped out. But after they hit 1031, my goodness, they rolled over
mm-hmm.
1031 and came all the way down to 1002.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 30-point move.
There you are. That's what I'm saying. The beans
are
just a fabulous market.
At night, supposedly there's nobody trading the beans.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, holding an overnight position could be very difficult. I mean, we don't typically see the S&P move 30 points overnight.
No. The soybeans can do that, and the S&P can do it as well, but you don't see it very often.
Yeah.
Do
you see it very often in the beans? Or was last night something extraordinary?
Well, I would say that we see it a whole lot more often in beans than we do in the S&P. There's no question. the S&P, and it's not going to move 30-point swings on an overnight move very often, but the soybeans will often move anywhere from 15 to 20 cents or more on the overnight. I've seen, you know, you can see that all over the chart. So it does happen. And soybeans, again, has just tremendous moves, easy market to read, and you don't necessarily have to, you know, obviously be in for the whole move. You just have to be able to call a decent swing out of it to pick up some nice gains. You do have to risk a little bit more than that than we risk in the S&P, but it's worth, you know, risk and reward, you know, work together for the most part. Once in a great while, you'll catch a trade where you risk a point and a half or 2 points or something small, and you get a 10-point gain out of it. And that, still, risk and reward are tied together, but generally speaking, you're going to have to risk more money to make more money. It's just the nature of the whole thing works that way. So, again, it all comes back to skill levels, understanding, and maturity in the markets. You know, there really is, the word maturity is a good word for the markets. There really is a level of maturity that you come to. And it took me many, many, many years, and I'm not saying that I'm Mr. Mature, but I'm saying it took me many, many years. Rather than saying who I am and where I am in the market, I'd rather be able to tell you that where I'm not. And I'm not at the point right now where I'm chasing every trade. I'm not at the point right now where I'm angry if I miss a trade. I'm not at the points, all the things that we've talked about.
You're not out on the windowsill.
I'm not out on the windowsill, correct. And so if there's a mountain to climb, I've transcended some of those levels, which has made a great difference. And remember, a lot of getting better in trading is not acquiring a new skill. It's actually eliminating a bad skill, a bad habit. That's a lot of what your growth is in trading, is not acquiring something new, but actually seeing through something that you were doing as wrong and eliminating it. That's a lot of what growth actually turns out to be. And that turns into better trading in general. And then you, in that better trading, you learn even more. You know, the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. There's that principle again.
Yeah, as I used to train salesmen, especially salesmen that would come to me with experience, I had to work harder at untraining them than I did training them.
Yeah, that's a great example. I
had to help them unlearn all these bad, unproductive habits that they had and techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
say, look, here's a couple simple things. If you use these, you know, use this, rinse and repeat. You know, use this, rinse
yeah.
and repeat. I mean, that's all you
mm-hmm.
need. So.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. That's the idea, is that you end up finding out that what you did, and you didn't realize this, is you came to the market with a bunch of ideas and preconceptions and proclivities, some skills, and some habits. And as you start to trade, you're seeing those habits and those skills play themselves out right in front of you. And really, a great deal of the growth is actually simply seeing the bad, the false, and letting it go, getting rid of it, so that it's not weighing down your trading. That really is, for me, a lot of where my growth, if you want to call it that, came from. Rather than acquiring a new skill in trading, it was getting rid of a lot of bad habits. I came to the table with a lot of mental bad habits, one of which was that I did well in another business and thought that I had the golden touch. And so I did well there, and I brought it over here, and I thought, well, I've got the golden touch, I can do it here. And I very quickly found out that I don't want to go over the numbers because they're just too ugly, but you know, I paid a lot of money to find out that I didn't have the golden touch.
Boy, do I resemble that remark.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of traders, if they're honest, will say that they've lost an enormous amount of money practicing and trading in the markets.
Well, I'm referring specifically to the fact that I had a business where I had a golden touch, and come to find out I had a golden touch in that business.
Mm-hmm.
It did mean
exactly.
that I had the unilateral across the board golden touch.
But you see how quickly we take something like that. You have success in one area, and you think you have it in others. Look at Michael Jordan tried to take up baseball.
Yeah.
You know, he had a great skill in basketball. It didn't work out so well in baseball. But psychologically, you just start feeling great about yourself. And the Bible says pride before a fall, not pride after a fall,
right.
Pride before a fall. And that pride, I took that to the markets. That idea was in my head, buried in my head, that there's something special, unique about me, that I can prove it because I did well over here, see? So now I'm going to bring that specialness over here. And, you know, that idea cost several hundred thousand dollars to get that out of my head, that I'm not special in the markets, that I have to practice this and find my way and really be a light unto myself and to the markets over here. This is different than my other business. So it took me a long time. And I think people go through that experience. It's not that unusual. for people to lose money in the markets, and it's a great equalizer. You know, you either stay around and can try to get over those bad habits and continue to trade, or perhaps you just go do something else, and there's nothing wrong with that either.
Nope.
So, well, listen, we've covered a lot of ground today. We do sometimes, Duane. We run. This is a Friday. We've covered a lot of ground. I really appreciate the interaction from your guests and from your listeners. I love to hear that, and it helps the discussion. And I hope that the things that we discuss are useful to people. And, you know, it's good to hear that there's people out there listening and that we can talk and respond to them as well. So thank you for the people that responded today. And, Duane, I'm looking forward to next week. We'll update our longer-term outlook in our nightly report over the weekend here. And I'd like to wish you and all of your listeners a great weekend. Go out and get some exercise and some other things with your life and balance your life off. And I really look forward to chatting with you next week.
David, you have a great weekend, and we will talk to you Monday.
Okay, great. Have a great weekend as well.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, friends. That's the call to wrap it up. Now do what he said. Go get some exercise. Get out from behind the desk. Spend quality time with friends and family. I'll see you in church on Sunday. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Pastor Duane Reeves, and his guests. This information should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed security broker or financial planner before making any investment decisions. You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.